This is 307 Net Info, connecting community. This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and today I'm joined by School District Superintendent Charles Oskey. Hello, Charles. Nice to see you.
Good morning. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. And we're almost at the end of the school year. I mean, we are at the end
of the school year.
I always feel that, you know, when we've got to graduation, that's really a big wind down. Maybe you don't if you're a teacher or a student, but we're really just in the end game, just a few more days until school's out for summer.
Yes.
And there's some changes. We've had a couple of significant resignations, both at BHS. The principal position is open now. Mr. Ostheimer is leaving us, as is the athletic director, Ryan Major, is stepping down. And so there are two positions to fill. Can you tell us what is going to happen about filling those? Because it's quite late in the day, isn't it?
It is. So let's go back to the original thing. Yes, it's the end of the year. I can't believe it's the end of the year. We have state soccer. Kids are doing well. They're placed there. We have two boys and girls were regional champs in sports and athletics and headed off to state. And graduation. BHS graduated last weekend. New West is tonight. And KC is tomorrow. And then on to your next question. Well, first of all, where did the year go? But we're here. And change is inevitable. We're already gearing up for next year. But we do have two significant positions to look at replacing. So the BHS principal position has been open. It will close on the 28th
of May,
and I will start establishing a committee, which I already have. I will actually solidify that here today, and then we'll go through applicants, and then what we will do is try to interview sometime in that second or third week of June and make a recommendation, and probably we'll end up, just because of the timing of things, look at probably having a special board meeting to approve that, because that is a position that I need to have in place definitely before July 1st, because whatever happens there is going to be the trickle effect to several different things. But in addition to that, getting that activities position probably restructured in transparency of what that looks like. But again, the first priority is the BHS principal position, putting that committee together. So the community knows it will be very similar to what we've done for Meadowlark and Cloud Peak. With the exception, with our reduction in student numbers, I usually reference that as ADM, average daily membership, we're actually going to see between how we're funded this year in the model, at around 1,170 students, we're probably going to be down about 70 students starting next year. So we really
70 students.
70 students starting. That's going to be the discrepancy between how we were funded this year. So that really will be that three-year rolling average of 26, 27. So
can I just stop you and ask? In a community our size, that sounds a significant number. What is behind the decrease?
No, that's a great question. We've talked in a couple of different versions about that, but our community, 50% of our community is 50 and older. It's the demographics. It's kind of a statewide thing. It's not just a Johnson County thing. One of our larger school districts, which is Cheyenne, has concerns. They're down just 500 students this year alone from the start to the end. So we're starting to see a lot of transition. There's the ESA, the Educational Savings Account, that I think brings some things to the table.
And that's where the legislature now have given up to $7,000 per student to homeschool families if they hit a certain number of criteria for materials and other things. It's not that you're paid to homeschool, but you are eligible to claim that money back.
Yeah.
So that makes homeschooling more affordable.
It does. So, I mean, that's going to have an impact on public education. It's not easy to accept, and it's when Charles says this, but we're not the only game in town. We're not the only option that parents have, and public education is to the point where we're in a competitive market. Not just strictly because the ESA, but because of virtual schools, charter schools, private schools. It's become a new trend since COVID. So we are in a business where we are a competitive business now, as where public school used to be really one of the only options for parents, but there's just multiple options. So making sure that we get our systems in place and can be competitive, because I still believe Johnson County, the Johnson County School District number one, is the best for kids. However, it's not just saying it, we have to prove it. So, but when I say that, we're not really on a level playing field with all the other competition, because we have an accountability level that's extremely higher than even the people that are receiving the educational savings account money. There's really not the same accountability of student scores, where we're at. So,
nor is there the same rules and regulations. I mean, you have a lot of legislation around what you do.
Yep.
And there are huge systems. I mean, it's a massive bureaucratic machine as well as being an education establishment.
Yeah.
It's very complicated. I'm always struck by that when I visit with you about all these details of matters. I mean, the education piece sometimes feels like it's sidelined to, you know, all the bureaucracy.
Yeah, it is. You know, and to come back to where we're at. So one of the things I implemented this year, part of, again, stabilizing our budget and getting where we need to be, is an actual protocol in Johnson County School District. When a position comes open, we have really got to start looking internally first, and having that hard conversation of whether it's a position we even refill, because our numbers are down. So one of the things we start looking at is, according to our ADM, which is the number of students we have, where is the model funding? We've got to get closer to the model. I don't want to be the model, but we got to get closer to the model. So we got to look at that first. And if it's an essential position that needs to be replaced, we need to look internally. And then we make a decision on what we're going to move forward with.
So what I'm hearing you say is essentially the funding model works in the, and this is a very crude way of putting it, but distilled right down, the number of students within a school system determines how much money you have to spend.
Absolutely.
And so the less students you have, the less money you have, but you still have overhead, because you still have, you may still need the same number of teachers, and you certainly still have the same buildings for a while, and they all have fixed and set costs. And so you are trying to make less money go further. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. So just going back to the principal at BHS, I think, you know, somewhat seen as a flagship part of the school district. What do you look for in a principal, in a high school principal?
So for me, is the interview process is just not about a principal. It's somebody who's connected to the community. So we need leadership that leads within the building, but somebody needs to be connected to the community.
So you're looking for somebody within the district?
So back to what I just said before, we're going to start. If I'm going to expect principals and everybody else to follow the same protocol I am, I'm going to do the same thing. So, but we always, it's not just, it's a guarantee, but we want to put the best person in that position.
So, are we at a disadvantage because it's late in the school year? And I mean, it feels, I know that this has happened, you know, multiple times with principals, especially at VHS, that, you know, they have been appointed late, you know, in the summer after school's out. And is that unusual, or is that something that,
that is unusual?
Okay.
And it's an opportunity, but I want to do the process correct and hire the right person, or at least put the right person in. Is this the optimum time to be looking for administrators? You know, I think we have great people internally. If the process and they're interested, we can move. But I want to go through the interview process. But typically, coming back to your original question, you do these searches for administrative leadership January, February. So that's when a pool. By now, most administrators have been in place. The ones that have interviewed and were quality applicants have been hired and under contract. So it is very late in the season.
Does that concern you that, you know, that may create, you know, maybe not as good a pool of candidates as...
You know, I'm going to come back. I still feel very confident we have some pools internally that can look with where we're at. But I will come back to it. If we didn't have the potential here, yeah, that it would be. And I'm not throwing anybody under the bus or by saying there wouldn't be quality applicants. But we are made. People are looking for houses. It's a process. They're moving. They're already under contract with other districts. This is a time that really reinforces what I've been trying to do for the last 2 years is growing internally. If you look at highly successful districts, and I actually had a conversation with a gentleman yesterday that how do you keep administrators and how do you keep the district high performing? And it really starts internally with that growth process. So when they look for new people to come in, they get them in into the system as an assistant principal, they get them in as an instructional coach, they grow them. So as they move through the process, they got families, they were able to find homes. You're not investing in something that something's going to leave quickly. So when you come back to your original question is, I've been here 4 years, and the reality of some of this is there's been some great candidates in that position, but finding somebody that's committed to the community, beliefs or not beliefs, is they got to be not only invested in the community, they have to be able to show some leadership. So we as a district have to start recruiting internally for leadership positions and growing them so they're invested. Until we get, you know, a market of homes that's affordable and get some different things and the pool of candidates becomes larger, which we know it's not, and that's just for educators and everybody around the board, districts our size around the state are going to struggle. What makes Johnson County even harder is we live next to the mountains, so to buy a house here is, you know, we can't ask people to sell their house for 50% less so we can get somebody in. So
another factor, of course, which influences teachers wanting to come in from outside the district or even to stay within the district is salaries. And yes, that was an issue that came up at the board meeting last month or this month, earlier in the month. And there was an increase that was voted upon. How does that put us compared to other similar districts around the state, but also our neighboring districts?
Well, we lost some grounds, to be honest with you. I'm excited that we gave a $1,500 raise, but majority of districts, I think it was 5 or 6 years ago when they made that hard cut of 10%, they cut down on a line to the model. We're one of a few districts that did not, so we've been kind of navigating that water. That's why my initiative over the last 2.5 years is saying we've got to find a way to get down. Those districts surpassed us by almost $1,500 to $2,000 more in the raise to the base.
Is that something that you feel we really need to keep addressing if we're going to
absolutely.
if we're going to keep and attract?
So I'll speak to the future. We need to start aligning to the model because our model is that we're going to see a decrease in funding or how the model funds staffing.
So how are you going to juggle what we've already discussed is a decreasing amount of money funding because there are less students, and the way that the model is set up is that basically more students equals more money, less students equals less money, and still increase staff salaries.
Staying intentional about my strategic plan of how we naturally reduce staff. I've been in front of administrators. I've spoke to this multiple times over the last year and a half is, This isn't going away, and so we got to stay intentional with that. I want to come back to, I think, can we be successful? Absolutely, if we get closer to the model. Because this year, the ECA, if we wouldn't have had an ECA, we would have reduced our budget.
Could you explain ECA?
External cost adjustment. So the ECA that was given this year for school districts because of the lawsuit, without that, we would have been down $250,000. So That had a huge impact. It might have also caused a reduction in force policy to be kicked in. But you know, most administrators have been really good about reducing and paying attention to what it is, whether we like it or not. We're there. So that $250,000, part of that ECA absorbed that, and then the other part. You remember several years ago, we did that $500,000 to shore up our insurance. This year, we shored up our leave policies, and we committed to the promises the district had made over the last 20 years for buyouts. So we've navigated that $1.2 million liability down to where it's manageable. So we have been doing this at a district office to get ourselves in a place where more focus can be put on staffing and increasing those salaries. But it still has to be a team effort district-wide that we start aligning to what the model produces for us so that we can stay within our limits. So is it feasible? The answer is absolutely yes. Is it going to be hard? The answer is absolutely yes, because people aren't going to like it. There's a lot more no's. There's a potential of when people leave, we absorb from within. And if we don't start doing that, we will fall further and further behind, because that's what most districts have already done.
So what proportion of your overall budget is spent on staff salaries?
79 to 80%.
That's a significant amount.
It is.
And the rest goes to building maintenance.
Keeping the lights on, okay. All those other kind of things.
And we've discussed in the past how hard that can be too, because the maintenance of our aging buildings can be significant.
And, you know, so just on a exciting, and people don't get it, but I get excited about it. That is a separate funding model. But the reality is our work over the last 3 years with that $30 million and getting into the pipeline and starting to fix our buildings. I mean, KC project alone is the first component project I think Johnson County's had for a long, long time. That $3.6 million is not the first. It's going to be several that's coming down the line. But we talked about the number of students, or ADM, that impacts our general budget. Even though facilities funding is a different funding bucket, it is also impacted by the number of students enrolled in our district. So when our square footage, which legislation did a good job this year of increasing how that formula is, but the reality is most of our buildings, the educational space, according to our ADM, is, you know, that we're being used is between 60 and 70%. So as numbers go down, that will bring less funding to us to keep the same building, the same square footage up and the lights on as we go through. The other part that people don't realize is the ECA that was given, they took money away from keeping the lights on and keeping the buildings heated. So we've got to absorb that too.
So can you envision a time in Johnson County School District where we're not using all our buildings as we currently are now?
That's something that people need to think about.
I mean, there yes. presumably is a critical mass
yeah.
point when...
There will be a tipping point. I guess
yeah.
I reference it as a tipping point.
Yeah.
Do I see it in the near future, in the next 2 to 3 years? No, but it's something we need to be thinking about. If you look at our average class sizes, excuse me, in K-1-2, we're starting to see a trend of 60 to 70 kids, the average class size, when... This graduating class right now, we graduated 89 at BHS. There was 115 when the class started.
And what is happening for this junior class coming up into the senior year? What is the numbers like for that?
Those numbers, as we look at those, if I remember right, those coming up, BHS, that's at 65.
So there were 80...
So between 65 and 70, because you remember this
that's
is...
Right.
So, you know, it's still, we're starting to see a reduction as we go down in class sizes. So, you know, we graduated 89. If you look at this document I have in front of you, we're going to see, you know, 70, 80, 84, somewhere in those 80s and 70s. But then you get down here into the elementary, you start seeing a lot less. And so we got an 80 and 80, but we have a 60. And even you see these 60s in the K-1 too. So...
So we're just seeing increasingly smaller class sizes.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know, of course, what's going to happen when those kindergartners, you know, hit middle school and then the high school. We
yep.
don't know what sort of an educational landscape we're going to be in then, but
yep.
we do know that they're going to be less of them.
And I think it's a lot easier as a district to be on the real, real efficient side. And if our numbers increase, it's a lot easier to add than it is to subtract. So... you know, a new way of looking at things, not new for me, you're trying to preach it, but it's getting closer and closer to that reality is that these numbers and our bubbles are going down. Buffalo High School itself is right now 309. I was off. I thought we were going to be at 315. So we're already at 309 with a projection that we could be 305 at the start of the year next year. So, the predictions that we're being... that where we would land and where we are now, are it's just a hard predictor.
Well, things feel just a lot more fluid, I think. Yeah. Another factor, maybe you could describe where this fits in, is the recalibration process.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Because that's something else that we've heard quite a bit about. It's a word that maybe not everybody understands. Maybe you could just briefly explain how recalibration would fit against what we've been talking about.
So recalibration is critical. It happens every 5 years, to understand that. And when we talk about recalibration by state statute, the legislation creates a committee which comes back and makes sure the funding formula that schools receive actually funds schools adequately. You have, paralleling that, is the lawsuit, which the state lost. So there's going to be a lot of hard conversations. Where do you find the money to fund it appropriately according to the lawsuit?
So the lawsuit, just to remind people, basically... a judge found in favor of the plaintiffs, who was basically saying that the state had been negligent and had not funded education enough in various different areas, and that needed to be rectified. So the state is under pressure to put more dollars into education, but it's also against this backdrop of where we are now in that 5-year recalibration moment as well.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing that we see an increasing need for, and I think has come higher up the agenda, but it seems to be a little uncertain, is the role of special education and the funding for special education, because that came from the Federal Department of Education, which is in flux, I think it would be fair to say. I don't think anybody exactly knows where it stands right now, but if you have a child in Johnson County School District who may need special ed support, can you feel secure that that is going to be in place next year?
Absolutely. And here's what I say. The funding has changed, but the requirements have not. So I want to be very clear. The federal laws and what we provide and what we're required to apply have not changed. The challenge comes with the reduction, potential reduction in funding, is we as a district will still have to find a way to fund it. So I, looking at our preliminary results for Title I, Title II, some of those we're looking at easily, a $25,000 to $60,000 reduction in just those funds. Special ed is a different cat, a different ball game, but even if there's a reduction there, I feel really confident that what we've done over the last 3 years since I've been here is pushing the things we can qualify into the state-funded special ed, and allowing our federal grant money to support the needs of some of these other high needs. But again, any reduction in any funding at any level is going to require some hard thoughts on where we're going to find the money. One student, for everybody to understand, in a day program, that because we can't provide the services, so a day program is something that we go to another entity to do, can be anywhere from $300,000 to $500,000 a year. That has to be front-funded, and we'll talk about that, front-funded by the district a year in advance before we get reimbursed. So that means we have to be able to find the money to pay for something. And you
So that's a cash flow problem then?
That becomes a cash flow problem. So, yes, well, what's the big deal? I mean, I hear that a lot. Well, it's a big deal. It's reimbursed. The key word is reimbursed, and it's reimbursed the next year. So in the meantime, hard times happen because federal law requires that you will meet these. That means you come out of the general budget to front fund that. So, and our special ed department is actually larger than any school we have with the number of employees and what they do. So that is a school in itself. If you were to take our special ed department and pull it out and treat it as a building, it would be our largest building staff-wise, not student-wise, but staffing-wise, it would be our largest building.
And that begs the question, even though it is the biggest, is it adequate? Do you need more?
Everybody wants a little bit more. We're seeing a need for more. But I want to remind everybody, we just can't say we can give more because there's rules and regulations about what we can and can't do.
So whilst there's a general enthusiasm that school is out, this is in fact probably the busiest time of all for administration, and you have
a
very intense period between now and when school bell rings again.
Yeah. So I appreciate that comment because a lot of people, hey, you're excited for summer, going to get some time off. for this office, this is the most stressful season. Yeah, we're excited. We're celebrating graduations and kids, but between the end of school and the start of school, for the district office, with state reporting, grant writing, getting our PD schedule together, putting leadership in place, and now you throw on recalibration. It's going to be I just ramped up from 60 miles an hour to about 85 at the end of next week. So it's going to be good, though. It's an opportunity, right?
So I would be remiss if I didn't ask you just a little bit more about the athletic director. You mentioned that you may not reappoint in exactly the same way. What options are there on the table? I think it's no secret that, you know, athletics has been pretty troubled at the high school this year, and that there are, you know, lots of different opinions and so on. What can you say about who will take over next, and will there be policy changes? And
so there will be. So you're absolutely right. I mean, there are good things that came out of both the surveys and the parents, and I still have to wrap that up. As a matter of fact, everything just keeps piling. It hasn't been forgotten about, but I can summarize some things. There were some positive things that came out of what happened, but there are also some very clear things that need to change with communication and other things. But the other thing I want to come back to is, what does the activities look like? That trickle-down effect is going to be from what we put in leadership. But for me to follow my process for the AD position is, currently we fund basically two full-time administrator positions at BHS, with the AD position, the half-time assistant principal, and the full-time. With where our
numbers... So those two, the AD and the assistant
are
split.
Were considered, as they're funded,
okay,
would be considered... they were paid as administrative positions, or are paid, or were paid, however you want to say it. However, everybody needs to understand that with BHS being below 315 now, the actual model
is... You mean number of students?
Number of students, yeah. The number of students. Our model actually only funds one. So...
Which will be the new principal, because you can't do without a principal.
However, I don't want to add to anxiety. I understand there needs to be more administrative support, or at least a half-time, and maintain that. So this is our time to look at that, what that restructure looks like. Other districts, you know, have AD positions or stipend, or they created what was called an events coordinator. The actual administrative duties, like evaluating a coach or overseeing concerned parent things, really would fall maybe under an assistant principal's position in districts our size. And then the events coordinator, or schedule coordinator, or stipend position. So the duties don't go away.
So are those the two sort of essential functions? There's one, which is coordinating all the events with the other school districts,
yep,
with whom we compete. And that is logistical piece that, you know, probably stands on its own. And then there's another piece which is much more fluid, I would imagine, which is making sure that coaches are properly in place and that adhering to protocols, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then also dealing with all those ad hoc things that just come up in the middle of a season.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, and so do you see a change in policy as to how we've been handling things?
Okay, I'm not going to use the word policy, but we are going to establish a district-wide coaches handbook.
Okay.
A set of expectations. I wouldn't call it policies, but it will be adopted by the board. It's like an employee handbook, but a coach's handbook, so which will include that process of how things are evaluated, what we do, what are the expectations. So that will be developed. Is there a specific policy? No. But a staff or a coach's handbook will definitely be.
Well, I hope that's something we could have a conversation about, because you know, there is an interface between coaches
and parents. Increased my anxiety, because that's the other thing that's on the table this summer. That, you know what? Man, it is May. That means June and July. I have to have all this in place by July 1st, and there's a lot of moving parts. However, I'll put it this way. God's given me an opportunity, and I have great people behind me, and it'll happen. So,
okay. Well, you do have a lot on your plate. I'd better leave you to it. Thank you very much indeed, Charles, for taking us across all these different issues. I appreciate your time.
No, it's great. And I hope the community understands. If they ever have any questions, please don't be afraid to ask. So.
Well, thank you. And I will put your phone number on the bottom of this post then.
There you go.
Thank you. Have a good day, Charles.
You too. Bye.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.